Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed. Advocacy groups call it the silencing crime, sexual violence against journalists. But after CBS correspondent Lara Logan and other journalists publicly described being sexually assaulted on assignment and kept on reporting about the conflicts that made them targets, the silence was broken and others began speaking out. The Committee to Protect Journalists has maintained the momentum by publishing two reports on sexual violence and promoting the benefits of training staff to deal with the risk. With us on Global Journalist today is Lauren Wolf, the author of those two CPJ reports, and Soraya Sahardi Nelson, an NPR foreign correspondent based in Cairo. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Hey. So, Lara Logan was interviewed on the news program 60 Minutes after the attack in Egypt's Tahrir Square last year, and this is what she said about an unexpected reaction.
One thing that I'm extremely proud of that I didn't intend is when my female colleague stood up and said that I'd broken the silence on what all of us have experienced but never talk about.
And Lara's a CPJ board member, so I imagine, Lauren, that the organization was particularly upset about what happened to her.
That's right. The morning we all heard about her being assaulted, I mean, the entire office basically froze in horror. It was a really terrible time. But what it did was it really prompted me to start wondering why this was the first time I'd ever heard about the sexual assault of a journalist, besides maybe one other case. So that day I decided I would take a look into her records and try to figure out what had happened before. You know, why was it every day we were writing about physical assaults and beatings and you know, things like jailings and kidnappings and all kinds of terrible things except sexual assault. And what I did was I discovered that about we had maybe five cases on record, and I published those five cases the next day after Lara was assaulted and just said, you know, the reason we don't have cases on record is partly because we haven't sought them out, partly because people haven't told them to us, but also people had been telling them to us, I found out, but we weren't necessarily given permission to speak about them. Within a half an hour of publishing that piece, I received an email from a journalist who wanted to tell me that she'd been sexually assaulted while reporting in Pakistan and that she'd never told anyone before. And I thought that was very powerful, that it took only half an hour of us declaring that we haven't been talking about this, and a day after Lara was assaulted and it was announced, for this one journalist to come forward. So that really prompted me to start looking harder and trying to figure out what might be going on.
And can you share some of the findings from the first report?
Sure. What I found after speaking to more than 50 journalists, international and local, worldwide, was that the assaults fall into three basic categories. There's targeted sexual violation of journalists, often in reprisal for their work. There's also mob-related sexual violence of journalists recovering public events on, say, a dangerous assignment, maybe a protest or a funeral. And the third way is that journalists who are held in captivity are often sexually assaulted, but men and women.
And also two other journalists who became international inspirations for publicly talking about being sexually assaulted on assignment are the New York Times war photographer Lindsay Addario and Yaneth Bedoya, an investigative journalist in Colombia. Lauren, could you summarize their harrowing adventures, and then I'll have Soraya talk about her knowledge of this.
Sure. Yaneth is a truly amazing journalist. In 2000, she was gang raped while on assignment. She was covering corruption in a prison, and she was drugged and driven out into a rural area and basically left for dead in a garbage dump. She has never stayed quiet about that. So she's been fighting for 12 years now for justice, and her case has actually recently moved to the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights because the country of Colombia has done basically nothing to bring justice for her. So she's incredibly brave in that way. And Lindsay Addario was one of four journalists who was held captive in Libya, and all of them experienced some kind of abuse. And she and actually one of her colleagues also experienced groping and very uncomfortable sexual abuse while they were there. And she bravely stood up and said, you know what, don't tell me not to go back to a war zone. It doesn't matter if I'm a man or a woman. We all experience violence, and I'm going to do what I do as a war correspondent.
Right. And Global Journalists interviewed Bedoya this spring after she was given the International Woman of Courage Award by the U.S. government. We asked her about the fear involved in continuing to cover these high-risk issues, such as drug cartels and corruption, which she's doing in Colombia. And she said, if you're not afraid, the story is probably not worth covering. And she used war coverage in Afghanistan as a particularly brave assignment. And Soraya, you reported in Afghanistan for about 3.5 years and also in neighboring Pakistan before heading to the Arab to Egypt, where things were also pretty hot with the revolution. Do you agree with Bedoya about the fear factor?
There is a fear factor, but as Lindsay also pointed out, it's really important that we don't segregate men and women and say women journalists face an additional problem. I mean, sexual assault is a real problem for women across the world, whether they're journalists or not. And some of it is misogyny, some of it is a cultural thing, some of it is calculated, like what we see here in Egypt, for example. The worst experiences of sexual assault I've had have been in Pakistan and Afghanistan. I've had less, thankfully, here in Egypt. But I guess I've been one of the fortunate ones who has never felt like I couldn't talk about it. Now, I mean, in fairness, I haven't experienced some of the horrific violence that, for example, Lara Logan or some others have experienced. So I don't want to take away from that. I mean, it is a horrible thing. And there is some fear, some thought, let's say, that goes into it when we go into that sort of environment. Certainly here in Egypt, I have 3 female staff members besides myself and 1 male. We always go in teams of 2. And a lot of it does have to do with the fact that I want to make sure that people are safe. I mean, it's a lot harder to assault 2 than 1.
And what some people outside the profession wonder whether the media should even send female correspondents to conflict zones. But what are some of the advantages that women bring to the assignment, Soraya?
Well, certainly in the Muslim world, which I've covered quite extensively, being a woman allows you access to half the population that's female. I mean, this is not an environment where men can necessarily talk to women. Even in the more advanced, if you will, countries like Egypt, many of the places are quite, shall we say, rural, you know, people who are uneducated. They have very strong cultural norms here. And so it's really important to have women. I think that, you know, we are able to bring part of the story that men cannot. Plus, I think most of us who are in this field feel that we've worked hard enough that this whole differentiation based on our gender is quite annoying and grating, frankly, even for those of us who've had horrible things happen.
Do you have any kind of personal anecdotes about how you kind of had a breakthrough someone you're interviewing there, some of the women you're interviewing there in Afghanistan and also Cairo?
Well, it goes even back before that when I was a print journalist and I worked for then Night River newspapers. I did a story about honor killings where I was able to interview a mother who was accused of killing her daughter because she felt that she had been raped by a brother. And, so she felt that the honor had to be brought back by killing the daughter. It's a conversation that I think pointed in or showed an important light on an issue that's very underreported. And I don't think a male reporter would have had that access, if you will. I mean, I had a female photographer with me. I was a female. I had a female translator. It made a big difference.
One of the thorniest issues is, and Lauren, why are journalists reticent to report their attacks? Sexual attacks.
Yeah, first I just want to emphasize what Soraya just said.
Okay.
The fact that women are being talked about as undergoing rape and sexual assault, yes, it happens proportionally to women more than men, journalists or otherwise across the world, but I can't state strongly enough how every day I worked at CPJ, how many cases of male journalists I documented with having their fingers broken, their heads bashed in, all kinds of terrible assaults. So basically, the idea of opening up this conversation on sexual assault is to say this is also a risk. This is not an added special woman-only risk. This is just sort of a risk that we need to be aware of so that women don't have to either undergo it or suffer in silence afterwards. And they do suffer in silence. As you know, like you were just asking me, there's so much stigma in journalism about being considered weak or vulnerable. And women have worked so hard just to gain parity with men that at this point, to appear in any way that you could be attacked, you know, whether because of your gender or because you're smaller than a man, for any reason to appear weak is a really big problem in a lot of newsrooms. So editors haven't made it comfortable for women reporters to talk about this. They haven't brought the subject up themselves. And women have had to remain silent, not only so they can hold on to their jobs, but also because in a lot of cultures, there's nowhere to report it to. You know, I spoke to many local journalists in many, many countries from Ivory Coast to Nigeria, where their bosses would either laugh at them or sexually harass them if they had talked about such an assault. And if they'd gone to the police, they could have been bribed or re-raped. So it's not that there's been any kind of outlet for women to safely talk about this, which is really a shame.
Now, also, what do you think of the Lauren's comments on that?
I think Lauren is absolutely right. I think perhaps it's more of a problem in other countries. I mean, again, I don't want to like hold NPR up there as an example of where one can talk about such things, but I've never experienced discomfort in any of the newspapers I've worked for in discussing when I've been. I mean, the first real sexual assault, if you will, that I experienced was in Gaza when it started to become sort of conservative around the 2003 sort of time frame, and I went to a scene of a bombing, and all these kids started pinching me all in my private parts. I mean, I had literally had bruises all over. This went on for about 15-20 minutes.
Oh.
And I was quite shaken when I went back to the hotel. I had no problem talking to my male editor in Washington about that, and it helped. I mean, it was sort of a debriefing that when you have a trauma happen, you need to debrief. Whether it's being in a firefight or whether it's a sexual assault. I mean, you need to be able to talk about it. Silence is deadly, frankly. And I guess I've been very blessed in that in the United States, perhaps, or at least at the papers and news organizations I've worked at, that it has not been a taboo topic.
Now, Soraya, do you feel that putting too much attention on this issue undermines the accomplishments of female journalists what they've made over the years?
I'm sorry, you're
asking. Do you think that if you putting too much attention on this undermines the accomplishments of female journalists and may be make news organizations less willing to put them in dangerous situations?
I don't think it's bad to have a conversation. I think, in fact, it's vital to have a conversation. And I think the study that Lauren did, which I'm going to go read now as we get off, is very, very important. I do think there are some real issues that are sort of where women journalists perhaps face. But I really do feel it's important to talk about the accomplishments that women have had in this field. I mean, if you look at who's covering the Middle East right now, it's mostly women.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about, you've been in the field for a long time, Soraya. Talk about how this has changed and how, I guess you were, when you first started out, there probably weren't as many women involved. How did this come about?
Actually for me, I mean, I started working in domestic American papers. It wasn't until well into my career that I came overseas. And at that point, I think the first Gulf War brought a lot of women into the fold. At that point, I think women journalists were more accepted. It wasn't so much the boys on the bus mentality, or less so. And a lot of the people who came before me, including Marie Colvin, who unfortunately recently died, or was killed, I should say, in Syria. I mean, these people were trailblazers for us. And, you know, then we came along, and hopefully we'll be trailblazers for the next generation. And I guess my only concern is I don't want our contribution to be reduced to a conversation about sexual assault and what we need to do to deal with it. Because, frankly, as Lauren points out, men face assault. So this is part of a range of assaults or a range of tactics, sometimes by the government, sometimes mob mentality. They're used to silence us, I mean, you know, or to, I guess, express anger or power. I mean, people say rape is not about sex. It's about domination or power. And it's no different when it happens to a journalist.
Let me ask you this, Soraya, and also Lauren, does the tactic work? Are they able, in many cases, to silence journalists?
Well, I guess I'll answer that. I mean, I titled my report The Silencing Crime and then had a couple people say to me, well, is that really accurate since we're all talking about it now, which is a really good point. You know, it's worked in a few cases. More so what it's done is it silenced journalists who then told me during my reporting that they'd never told anyone, not even a doctor, not their husbands, or not their wives, in a lot of cases, when it was men who've been sexually assaulted. So it really does create a silence, at least for that one person. And to me, that's a really terrible form of suffering, to not only go through a brutal attack, but then have to live quietly suffering with that for the rest of your life.
One of the other people that I've talked with and who's come here to the journalism school is Umar Chima, and he also is one of the victims who has publicly talked about what happened to him. Could you talk about, Lauren, Umar Chima's case?
Sure. Umar Chima was a very trailblazing journalist in Pakistan, and he had been kidnapped by what he then named as government forces, who stripped him, humiliated him, and sexually assaulted him. And I wrote about him in my report, and, you know, a lot of people were confused to see that I was writing about a man, and I understand he received, you know, a lot of kind of public calls in Pakistan about his case, trying to understand, you know, what's the difference between groping, what's the difference with sexual assault, and I think what people weren't grasping was he was actually brutally sodomized. He wasn't just, you know, tapped on his head impolitely. So I think there's just so much stigma around talking about sexual assault that it was incredibly brave of him to come forward. And the fact that he's emphasizing, you know, this happens to men too, is incredibly important.
Yeah, I wanted to read a quote from the email he sent to CPJ that you included it in the report. He said, 10 minutes after I was free, I started thinking about what I should do. The decision was I had to speak up. And he said, that decision has made me stronger and made my enemies more cowardly. Their efforts to intimidate me backfired.
Right. And, you know, Lindsay Addario said the same thing. She said, you know, I talked to her after her experience in Libya, and she said, you know, I really want to shame the Libyans. I want to point my finger at them and shame them, because most people in Libya, most men, most women, are utterly ashamed that this kind of sexual assault happened to her. And she was right. We received a number of apologies directed at her from Libyans saying, I'm mortified that this happened to you. So I don't think the majority of people understand or accept that this is a form of violence that their government should be carrying out. So I do think it's very important to name people in order to shame them. You know, another thing is, as I was doing this work, a friend pointed out to me, you know, if in New York a woman walks down a street and is raped and doesn't say anything, and then the next woman walks down the street and is raped and doesn't say anything, you know, that's never going to end. So if we don't point our fingers to it in order to protect the women going out into the field, how are we ever going to stop it?
And Soraya, you were friends, you know, Lindsay as well. Can you talk about her and her bravery in the field?
She's an amazing person. I mean, she's very humble for as famous as she is, you know, and as daring as she is. She's very sensitive to local culture. And the fact that she's also a mother now. I mean, she's a very well-rounded individual. And I'm very proud of her for speaking out about it. But I think I'm just as proud of her for saying, it's not just about me. You know, her colleagues were injured as well, one of them in a sort of sexual nature, frankly. And so, you know, for her to speak out, I think is brilliant. And I agree with Lauren that people should speak out about it. Again, my only caution is that we don't make it something so that groups like Reporters Without Borders in France come out with statements saying that editors should think about sending female correspondents into these sorts of environments like Egypt. It's just ludicrous, in my opinion.
I wanted to.
It rewards the people doing the rape and the sexual assaults and the sexual harassment.
Right.
Right. Right.
I want to move the discussion into the second part of the report that got into what media organizations are doing, and some of the, particularly NBC. But first, I want to remind everyone that you can view or listen to this program anytime by downloading our podcasts at globaljournalist.org. You can also find interesting articles, photos, and interviews related to our program on our website, which this week includes a Q&A with Jeanette Bedoya. Please send us questions or comments via globaljournalist@kbia.org or our Facebook page. You can also follow us on Twitter and at GJJournalist. Now, Lauren, let's talk about the second report, the follow-up, and what you found out.
Sure. I wrote an essay that published in April for CPJ's annual book, Attacks on the Press. And what we wanted to do was take a look at whether things had changed at all since the initial report had come out last June. Not just, you know, my report, but also just so many people speaking out from Lara to Lindsay to Mona Al-Tahawi. We wanted to see whether newsrooms were taking these threats and these kinds of assaults seriously. Because what I had initially found in my reporting was that newsrooms really weren't paying attention. They weren't specifically training women on how to protect themselves in these threats, or men on how to protect their colleagues and themselves on these threats. In fact, what I used to hear, and actually just recently heard again in Tunis for World Press Freedom Day, was people who've been through security training, journalists, have told me that they've experienced sexual harassment from the trainers themselves. So this is really a problem that's so far-reaching. And one of the things I also want to emphasize is that a lot of the stories I heard were not just from strangers, sources, and people who want to silence journalists, but also from their own colleagues and their bosses. You know, there's still a tremendous problem of sexual harassment and assault in the workplace that reaches into newsrooms as well. So when I was following up for this April report, I went and focused mainly on international journalists, less local journalists this time, and spoke to a dozen or so newsroom managers at international news outlets and editors who work with journalists in the field. And I asked them, you know, has anything changed for you? What do you do to prepare your reporters? And one of the most interesting responses I got was from an editor at Newsweek who said, you know, I deal with photojournalists, you know, a dozen at a time that I'm sending into conflict areas and dangerous assignments. And, you know, now that I think about it, I don't think I've ever asked them if they've experienced any kind of sexual assault. But you know what? I'm going to do that today. And I thought that was really positive. He just said, you know, if I don't understand the risks out there, how can I protect my journalists? And that's the whole point of all of this. The other thing that I found was only one newsroom has actually changed its curriculum in terms of training journalists. NBC has implemented an entire course that they've designed with a social worker in order to train journalists how to effectively deal with sexual assault and prevention, which includes sending their journalists into the field with things like morning after pills and all kinds of medical preventions.
And CBJ is also updating your safety guidelines to include tips for avoiding and surviving sexual assault as well. Is that right?
Right. That came out at the end of April, and I had worked on that a very little bit before I left CPJ, and it's actually a very comprehensive manual about security overall that does contain a section about sexual assault. Unfortunately, in my opinion, the reality is there's not a terribly huge amount you can do, but you can take basic precautions, and that guide addresses that very well.
And, yeah, the London-based International News Safety Institute also posted a safety advisor. They had some practical tips like buying door alarms for use in hotels, carrying a rape whistle.
I was actually just in Tunis with them doing a security training for international journalists as part of World Press Freedom Day. And what I thought was really interesting was that they asked me to join them with their security trainers, who are ex-Army members, who are these really excellent trainers in terms of how to protect yourself physically. And then we did a digital security training. But the very fact that they asked me to sit in and talk to the group about sexual assault and just to kind of make them aware that this is an issue they should think about, I thought was a real step forward. And it actually did produce one woman who I noticed was paying particular attention, who came up to me afterwards and told me a really terrible story about the kinds of sexual harassment and assault she's been facing from her own boss in the former Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm. And Soraya, when I imagine that you're a role model for a lot of young journalists, and including female journalists, and when they say, you know, how do you do what you do, and is it, and what advice could you give me? What do you tell them about reporting in from a dangerous area?
Well, stop and think before you leap. I mean, it sounds very basic, but it's really important to think about what you're doing before you leap into a situation that could end, that you can't extract yourself from. And again, I mean, sexual assault is a component of it, but it's not the thing that I think should be foremost on people's mind. I think in the end, some of these war zones, whether it's Afghanistan, well, Iraq is less so now perhaps, but even in Cairo where kidnapping has become common, I think you need to think about, where are you going? What's the story that you're doing? And, you know, can you extract yourself? What is your exit plan or your exit strategy? In the end, being prepared and being aware is going to be much more your friend than the passion you feel necessarily for a story. And believe me, even at this point, I'm still quite passionate about my story, and I don't necessarily always follow my own advice. But in the end, I think that will help. I mean, I don't blame anyone who gets into a situation where they are harassed and assaulted, and I think they should speak up. I'm glad they are feeling more comfortable doing it. Again, I've been blessed, I guess, in that I never felt uncomfortable speaking up.
And so what motivates you to report where there's this extreme danger?
I love the story. And I the people I meet are just incredibly amazing and warm and hospitable. It's almost like the worst place you are, I mean, the more hardship they have, the nicer and friendlier they are, the more open they are to people coming in and expressing an interest in their circumstance. I think it's really important for us in this shrinking world where technology has sort of bound us together, you know, economies, politics have bound us together, for us to understand what is happening in other countries. And in the end, I feel we're much better able to describe this than any government report or anybody else.
Right. And we have about a minute left. So, Lauren, any parting thoughts from on this subject that you'd like to
I really like what Soraya just said. When I was in Tunis with these security trainers, that was sort of the number one thing that startled the audience, was when they said, you know, think about what you're doing before you rush into a situation. Do you really need to be at the center of a crowd, or should you be on the side where you could actually get a better shot and not in front of the police and behind the protesters? And I think a lot of young journalists are running off into battle, trying to get the story. But like Soraya said, it's about being measured and really understanding your risks before you go in and taking precautions. You know, your story is important, but your life and your body and your integrity are more important, you know,
okay.
Hopefully.
Okay, Lauren. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks. You've been two great guests. And this has been a fascinating conversation, but we've come to the end of this week's edition of Global Journalist, produced by the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism. Joining us today were Lauren Wolf and Soraya Sahardi Nelson. Global Journalist is directed by Travis McMillan, audio by Pat Akers. Raymond Tungakar is our executive producer. Camille Phillips was our lead producer, assisted by Alex Baumstart and Eric Stysik. Join us again next week for another Global Journalist. I'm David Reed.